Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the newest episode of the Calcioland Podcast. So I'm thrilled that we're recording tonight. I want to thank everyone. Our episode on Monday, where we talked about Sarri, Milinkovic-Savic, got into some NBA talk, absolutely blew up. So we really appreciate your support. We felt a lot of pressure to follow it up with another excellent episode. And I'd like to think that we have a pretty good plan. So tonight, what we have planned for you, after a segment at the top, where we're going to talk a little bit about the Coppa Italia final and how Allegri would hypothetically fit at Arsenal, we're going to get into a preview of the Serie A weekend with game predictions from our dear friend Thousand Names. We are going to take a deep dive in the relegation race in Serie A, which is really exciting this time of year, with my colleague from the Marzio site, Paolo Mangone. We're going to get to your fantastic Twitter questions. We're going to end the podcast with a great interview with Aaron West, a person very qualified to discuss the potential of Allegri joining Arsenal. So that's what we have planned for you tonight. Before we get to all that, I am going to ask our co-host, Alex Goldberg, the same thing I'm going to that I asked Aaron West at the top. Alex, you know the Premier League much better than I. You've become a Serie A expert because of the podcast. I know now you really, really love the league. You're very familiar with Allegri, both the pros and cons that come with him. So let me ask you, hypothetically, how do you think Allegri would fit at Arsenal?
Well, right away, when I think about Allegri, I think about somebody that I respect. I think he's a very respectable manager. He's not a pushover. And when I think about Arsenal, David, they're kind of the pushover team. Yes, they're they really just are. I mean, come on. Unless you're – actually, even if you are an Arsenal fan, you kind of know what I'm talking about. It's a rich, prestigious club. They have so many trophies. But lately, they've kind of been that top team that we all love laughing at. And Arsene Wenger, amazing career, but it went on for way too long, and he really lost control of the club. There was such dysfunction with Arsenal for the last 4, 5, 6 years. I think of players like Theo Walcott and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, players that have such talent, and for many years, experts were saying they would go on to do this or that, really good things, and had such promise. And just there was so much dysfunction. They would sign a player, he wouldn't work out, or he'd get injured. I mean, they had numerous injuries. There was such dysfunction. They're a club that is often laughed about. And guess what? Allegri would immediately change the tune there. I'm not sure how he would necessarily fit from a personnel standpoint. I look at some of the players that Arsenal have. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang doesn't exactly seem like an Allegri guy. I'm sure Allegri can figure it out. Mesut Ozil. I don't see these players, I guess, David, in Juventus shirts. A lot of the players that Arsenal already have. I think a Hector Bellerin could definitely play under the current Juventus team. So from a personnel standpoint, I'm not sure. But from a respectability standpoint, absolutely, Allegri would be a really good fit. I think there'd be more structure to Arsenal, which I think is really important, because it's no secret, I'm a Chelsea fan, and yeah, Chelsea have not done well against Arsenal in the last year or two, but still, when I see Arsenal on the schedule, I kind of go, all right, if we're playing well, we can beat them. And if Allegri is in charge of Arsenal, I will not be so sure. He really has such a great football mind. I think he's got a great balance. You know, I'm unfortunately in a position where Chelsea's probably looking at a new coach and you kind of have positive and negatives. Well, this guy doesn't rotate, or this guy likes the youth, or this guy plays aesthetically pleasing, this guy plays defensive. I feel like Allegri kind of does a lot of everything, you know, or a little of everything, I should say. So I'm not, once again, I'm not sure how he'd fit with the current group of Arsenal players, but I think he'd bring some much needed respectability to Arsenal, which I have to admit they certainly do deserve. So that's kind of what I think about how Allegri would fit at Arsenal. But David, while we're on the subject of Max Allegri, we have to at least acknowledge that Juve won 4-0 the Coppa Italia yesterday. So Allegri gets another trophy with Juventus. So what was your take on the Coppa Italia final?
Yeah, so first off, Allegri, you know, I definitely appreciate your opinion, and it's more educated than what I could give on Arsenal, so I appreciate that. So you mentioned the results and the track record. Like, Allegri yesterday became the first coach in history of the top five leagues to win both the league and the domestic cup in a double for five for 4 years in a row. So that in and of itself really says a lot. I know Allegri gets criticized a lot for the style of play maybe sometimes, but at the end of the day, we remember results more. And I think, you know, if this is it with Juve, and I want to stress, you know, we're talking about this in a hypothetical with Allegri at Arsenal, because I don't think even he knows exactly what he's going to do next. I really do believe he's going to meet with Juve at the end of the season, which is right around the corner, and figure out what makes the most sense for all involved. So if this is it, you know, people remember more results than style. He's going to go down as one of the most successful Serie A managers. So you can say the league isn't as strong as years past. There's not as much competition, and that's certainly true. But over the course of history, that's never happened before, and that says a lot. So credit for him there. And to me, what's even more impressive is, look, you know, you can mock Juve for losing the Champions League finals under Allegri, but there's no way around it. They got there. So not only did he keep the great results in Italy, he really elevated them in Europe. And look, you know, they didn't lift the cup, but they also made a ton of revenues that have helped Juve stay at the top. So his legacy is really secure regardless of what happens. As far as my other takeaways for the match, you know, I don't want to get too dark on Milan, because I really think on a day like today after that loss, it's very easy to do. So I don't want to put salt in the wounds, but there really are some things that stood out to me at that match. I mean, what a disaster for Bonucci. There's just no way around it. Not only, you know, this season, Milan's now battling for Europa League spot. He won't be back in the Champions League. So 2 years in a row at Milan that he sits out of the biggest competition in Europe. He sees essentially his replacement at Juve, Benatia, score a brace. And Benatia's been in a lot of ways one of Juve's most important players for him. I mean, I think there's no way around it. So far, it's been a disaster move for Bonucci, and I think in a lot of ways maybe also for Milan, because look, Bonucci is a great player. You can get you know, the fact that you can get a player of that caliber with no Champions League, of course you do it. But when you consider his age, the big investment, the big wages, I mean, you got to ask yourself if Milan, you know, if they could get out of that deal, reinvest the money in another position for a younger player, maybe they do that. So right now, that's a disaster for Bonucci. The thing that stood out to me is, look, Milan played well in the first half, but it almost felt like Juve was playing a little bit possum. And the minute Juve went for the accelerator, there was just such a big gap. So when I look for Milan, you know, never mind just with Juve, the gap is really massive. And I think it was pretty obvious yesterday. But it's also, but besides Juve, the teams ahead of them in the standing, I think there really is a big difference, especially in the midfield and the attack. And look, you know, with all the financial insecurity with Milan, like, they really need to bridge the gap with talent. And, you know, even if you're the most optimistic Milan fan with all the financial matters, I mean, it's without a doubt they won't be able to spend like they did last summer. So they spent a fortune on improving the team. We can't really say they're much better than last year. So I don't want to get too dark for Milan, but that was really a rough day. The only bright side that I can see from Milan is, look, yesterday we saw a lot of their young players in the match. They are still a young team. You know, even these losses, you know, might be good in their development. So I think, you know, if you're a Milan fan, the best thing you can, the most optimistic outlook for the future is that these young players already on the squad develop, because there won't be too much help, unfortunately, coming from the transfer market.
What a way to end the season for Juve, of course. I mean, it's a long season for everybody. You have your highs, your lows, but what a giant. When we often remember how teams end the season, and if Juve get the Scudetto and end the Coppa Italia winning 4-0, well, we'll just remember another great season from Allegri and Juve. So, David, we really are coming to the end of the Serie A season, so I'm not sure how many more we'll have of these this season. So let's get to game predictions with you and Thousand Names. What do we have in store?
Yeah, I was really trying to bring up Thousand Names. She really wants to come back on the podcast. She really enjoyed it. But because we had two other guests, we couldn't squeeze him in today. But we'll bring him back next week for the final match of the season. And I've extended Thousand Name contract. He'll be our game predictor next season. I have some exciting ideas to make it a little bit more interactive with our listeners and to actually track what him and I are doing. So look for this segment to expand next season. So 1,000 names, by now you guys know how this worked. I ask him to send me 3 games. I don't pick them. He picks 3 games. He gives me the prediction. I'm going to read them to you in Italian and English, and I'll also make my prediction. So the first match that 1,000 name sent me in is Atalanta-Milan. He has Atalanta winning 2-0s. Goals from Ilicic and Caldara. And his comment is that Gasperini is going to embarrass Gattuso and he's going to give him a life lesson in this game. And he says that Milan threw away $250 million on the transfer market to end up being the joke of Italy and that Bonucci is going to be once again embarrassed. Rough day for Milan fans. And look, I got to say, I'll read it in Italian for people in Italy. Atalanta, Milan 2-0, Ilicic, Caldara, Gasperini prende schiaffi, Gattuso, gli spiega la vita, 250 milioni sul mercato per essere lo zimbello d'Italia, Bonucci ancora umiliato. Atalanta's been playing really well right now, and I think Milan's got to be really dejected after that. I think in a lot of ways, winning the Coppa Italia would have allowed them to go to the Europa League without the preliminary rounds. I'm almost thinking if Milan qualifies and has to go through the preliminary rounds, that does more damage than good. So I'm not even sure how motivated they are. I'm sure they're going to say that they are, but I have Atalanta winning this as well. I'm going to have it 1-0 with a goal by young striker Barrow, who's been on total fire. Next up, a big match on Sunday, Roma-Juve. 1,000 names has it 1-1, goal by Dzeko and Mandzukic. The comment, this is an Italian saying, meglio due feriti che un morto. So basically, it's like better to have 2 people injured instead of 1 dead. So it's almost like teams making an agreement will just get a draw so nobody really gets hurt. And with the result, 1,000 says that Roma's going to go to the Champions League and Juve is going to end up winning the Scudetto, which he calls the cartone, a fake Scudetto, which the next comment explains one, because he says that the honest people in Italy know that Napoli is really the champion. So in Italian, Roma Juve 1-1, Dzeko Mandzukic, meglio due feriti che un morto, la Roma va in Champions, la Juve vince lo scudetto di cartone, ma le persone oneste sanno che il Napoli è campione d'Italia. I don't have a strong opinion on this game. I could see it as a draw as well. I don't see Juve winning. If I had to pick a team to win, it would be Roma because they have more at stake, but I'll agree with 1,000. I'll give it 1-1, and I'll go with a goal by Cuadrado and a goal by Dzeko, who's been doing well. Last game of the season, you guys know that 1,000 name isn't too fond of Juve, at least on this podcast. The other team he doesn't like is Lazio, so he has Crotone beating him 1-0, goal by Simi. The comment is Crotone coach Zenga is going to give as a gift to his beloved Inter with this draw. He's going to give him the 4th place, the last spot in the Champions League, and he's going to clinch salvation with a game to go. And he also says that Simone Inzaghi can't win without Immobile and Luis Alberto. Luis Alberto is out for the season. Immobile is going to miss this one. So definitely some big injuries for Lazio. I'm not going to go as far. I'll read it in Italian. Crotone Lazio 1-0. Simi, Zenga regala il quarto posto alla sua amata Inter, ottenendo la salvezza con una giornata d'anticipo. Simone Inzaghi non vince più senza Immobile Luis Alberto. I don't think Lazio is going to lose, but they do have some tough losses on the squad. I'm going to give it as a draw. A lot at stake for Crotone, too. I'm going to go with 0-0. Couple of other matches I wanted to bring to your attention. Of course, Inter, big game. They need to keep up with Lazio, Roma, try to surpass them. They play at home against Sassuolo. Sassuolo essentially already avoided relegation. They have nothing to play for. Let's see how much of a fight they put up. Another match I wanted to bring to your attention is Sampdoria-Napoli. Really no title implication, but interestingly for Napoli, is Sampdoria manager Giampaolo has been named as a potential replacement for Sarri, so they could be facing potentially their future coach, and Napoli has been heavily linked to Torreira, a player that would fit in quite well if Jorginho leaves. So after we previewed the main matches in the coming up in the Serie A weekend. I wanted to take a slight deep dive on the relegation race because it's actually very exciting what's going on at the bottom of the table in Serie A. And, of course, there's no better person for this than my colleague on the Marzio side, Paolo Mangone. Every time we have these sorts of conversations, he's my go-to guy. In the summer when we do transfer news, he loves doing the smaller teams. I can't contain him. He's always ready for it. So, Paolo, it's a thrill to have you back. This is your wheelhouse, so welcome back to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. I'm glad to be back.
All right. So for those, you know, I think a lot of our listeners have been more interested on the title race, the Champions League spot, but the race at the bottom has been really fantastic. So we have two teams that have already been relegated. Benevento actually has been very feisty this season, got relegated a few weeks ago. Hellas Verona, who in a way almost mailed in the entire season, were recently relegated after the loss to Milan. But we have the third spot basically up for grabs, and it's very tight. We have five teams within 2 points. So what I wanted to do today with Paolo is we're going to go over the schedule of each of these teams, get his take on how he assesses their schedule, and maybe go over a reason why it would be good for these teams, for each team to stay up and maybe some standout performers. So Paolo, let's start with Spal, who's had a very impressive last stretch. I would say since March, they've been really quite feisty. So they sit at 35 points. They're in pretty good shape compared to the other teams. They are traveling to Torino, not to face Juve, but to face Mazzarri's team. And then they finish the season against Sampdoria. So looking as where they stand, how concerned should they be, and what has stood out to you about Spal?
As you said, they're very feisty. They play with five mids, like the soak up the pressure in the midfield, play with the three defenders. They like to set up on the counterattack, and then they like to press high. So, especially with Torino, I've noticed that Torino, like they like to go forward, they like to play with two wingers and Belotti up top. So, Spal, their Torino is ripe for Spal to take to steal a point off them. And also, going in their last game against Sampdoria, the Paolo Mazza has been a fortress for them. I think that's the reason why they're above the relegation zone right now. And I can easily see them to take at least a point in those two games, which I think would be enough to get them to survive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm pretty confident on Spal. They've really impressed me. They've had a good mix of some young players, some veterans, especially up front. It's been a winning formula for them. I think in the last match, Sampdoria, I don't think they have much to play for. I know they're still kind of in the Europa League race, so they should feel pretty good about themselves. So next up, we have three teams at 34 points. We're going to start with Chievo. So they recently did a coaching change. They let go of Maran, who I think is a good coach, but his time at Chievo had really come to an end. They promoted their Primavera team coach. Our Oracle, Thousand Names, came on the podcast and told us that he almost felt that that was a white flag, that Chievo was almost setting themselves up for next season to come back up to Serie A. I kind of bought into that a little bit, but they had a big win over the weekend with Birsa, who's, you know, hasn't played much recently, but I think is their best player, and they find themselves at 34 points. So their schedule is they are going to Bologna, and they end the season at home against Benevento. Benevento's already relegated. On paper, this looks pretty good to me. What's your assessment on Chievo and their schedule, Paolo?
Well, they can potentially win both games, especially after getting the new manager bounce after hiring, as you said, Lorenzo Danna as their interim manager. And both teams that they face are beatable. We know that Bologna could lose games, and especially and also going to play in Benevento at home. They're both winnable games, so it's possible that they could get 6 points in the last two games to clinch survival.
Yeah, go ahead.
Alex, you might have to run the tape, but I remember last time I was on, we were talking about the relegation race, and I think I said that Bjursa would have given him enough quality to survive, so hopefully my prediction stays true.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, we're big fans of Bjursa on the podcast for a variety of reasons. Okay, so next up we have Crotone. So last season they had that miraculous comeback. They made a coaching change fairly early in the season. I wasn't that thrilled with Zing as a coach. I loved him as a player, one of my idols growing up as a keeper. But as a manager, I had a question marks, and I think he's done okay, all things considered. So their remaining schedule, the first one's tough. They are facing Lazio at home over the weekend. Lazio's really pushing for the Champions League spot, and they finished the season at Napoli, and they really have nothing to play for, especially in that match. So give me your assessment on Crotone and how you kind of see their schedule.
Well, I think they have the hardest schedule out of the five teams. But their hope that they have is that they play Lazio at home. They, as you know, that they took a point off Juventus at home. So yeah. it's not impossible, but it is possible that they could easily take a point in the next two games, and they also play Napoli, who, have, as you said, they have nothing to play for. So they could also steal a point at home away against Napoli. So I can see them staying up. It'd be very difficult, though, especially because with their schedule.
Yeah, it's rough for them. So the last two teams, and these are surprising. So Udinese is sitting at 34 points tied with Chievo Crotone. They have to be very disappointed. I mean, the Oddo regime was an absolute disaster. So they've made their second coaching change of the season, bringing in Tudor, which is a little bit surprising. Came to a league he's not familiar with. Of course, as a player, he played there, but not as a manager. Their remaining schedule, though, looks pretty easy. So they are traveling to Verona to face Hellas Verona over the weekend. They close the season against Bologna. From where I'm sitting, of all these teams, and we have one more after this, they are the one with the most talent. I think they're the ones that should be the most disappointed for being here. So give me your assessment on Udinese so far and how you see their schedule.
I definitely agree with you, David. I was expecting them to finish mid-table this season, and as you said, it's a massive disappointment, especially of the fact that they're known for bringing up young players, and the only young player that I really did see was Barak and Yankto. Other than that, they seemed kind of poor this season. But in terms of their schedule, I think they can get 6 points. They play against Hellas, away against Hellas, and Hellas, as you already said, they've been mailing it in all season. And again, Bologna is also a beatable team, especially at home at the Stadio Friuli.
Yeah, and it's good that you mentioned the Stadio Friuli because, look, you know, a lot of people, when they always talk about Serie A and how the league can improve, they always say they need state-of-the-art stadiums. And, look, you know, that definitely helps. It's never a bad thing, but it's also not a silver bullet because I'd say other than Juve, maybe Udinese has the best stadium in Serie A. And ever since they've had it, it's not that things have gotten much better. You could argue they've gotten worse. But, yeah, at least it looks like they should be able to be okay before the season ends. And last one is the team that has absolutely fallen apart in recent weeks, Cagliari, who now find themselves at 33 points. I think up until the last 2 weeks, they weren't even really considered in the mix for this race, and now they find themselves at the bottom. Their schedule, not a picnic because of Europa League races. They are traveling to Tuscany to face Fiorentina over the weekend, and they close at home against Atalanta. So give me your assessment of Cagliari and their remaining schedule.
Well, it's the second hardest schedule, especially after Crotone. As you said, they have to go Fiorentina to play, and I think Fiorentina still has a chance, outside chance of making Europa League. And then the week after that, they play against Atalanta. So it's going to be very difficult, especially being one point behind and the loss of Yao Pedro after being suspended. I think they may be the one going down.
Interesting. Yeah, it's kind of shocking. So I was going to ask you in the end kind of your assessment. So you have Cagliari, and look, they're in the worst shape. I could see why you would say Crotone, but you know, on paper, Napoli, we don't know what they're going to do. I do know that the two teams Cagliari face look like they would be motivated. Other than Cagliari, who would be your second choice as the most team in danger right now?
My second choice would be Crotone. It's a toss-up between Udinese because I hope, but they'll be looking for a response after getting smacked by Inter 4-0. So I think they would be the one to get that response. But so Crotone would be my second choice because just based off their schedule.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. So, Paolo, really appreciate your assessments on that. So while I have you on, we're getting ready. The summer transfer window is going to start very soon. People can, of course, read you on Di Marzio's site. You're one of the go-to people for all the transfer news. So become friendly with Paolo. He'll answer your questions on transfers in the summer. So you excited? You good to go? This is our busy time is coming. You ready?
I'm ready. It's quite strange seeing the transfer news pop up already, so I'll get ready.
I think it's because we had such horrible and long winters that it feels really weird that it's starting, but it's kind of that time. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to working with you. I'm also looking forward to reading more of your articles. You've written some great stuff on Di Marzio's site, so keep it coming. And thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're very welcome, David. Always a pleasure.
Okay, and now for our favorite segment of the podcast, because our listeners really send us some great questions. We're going to go over some interesting topics. We got some transfer questions, some developments in Serie A as well with the league as a whole. So as usual, for those of you listening, you can send us questions on Serie A transfers for all leagues, music, TV, films, using the CalcioLand hashtag. So we have some good ones today, Alex. I have a feeling you're going to love the first one. So which ones are we going to go over tonight?
David, love is an understatement. But no matter what your answer is, this is my favorite Twitter question I've read so far. And that's saying something. There have been a lot of good ones. But without further ado, David, are there other specific examples of Antonio Conte acting like a petulant child in his previous managerial posts?
I've had a lot of takes over the years, but one of them that I think a lot of, you know, a lot of people bring up my bad ones, but one that I think no one can really dispute is how Conte is a great manager to take you from A to B, but maybe B to C, he isn't the right person. So this has kind of been a constant in his career. Like, he succeeds very much in the short term at any job he's had at the coaching level. And before Juve, he was really more in the lower divisions, does really well. But usually after the first year, things end up not going the way Conte wants it. There's a lot of complaints on the transfer market, issues with fans. These have been a constant for him even before his time at Juve. I'm sure a lot of Juve fans remember all his complaints on the transfer market, him bringing up revenues for teams. And Conte is a manager that quit right at the beginning of a summer retreat for Juve. Now, if you want to be a cynical person, you could say that maybe the club was in it and they announced it after the season ticket campaign. But long and short of it, he kind of left Juve right at the beginning of a season. So look, I love Conte. People that know me know that I think he's a fantastic manager. I think the world of him. But this is something that, you know, I think he could improve a little bit on. So I have to say, you know, his petulance and his complaining hasn't surprised me. But I will say, as a big fan of Conte, I am surprised on how, for a stretch of the season, if you wanted to say he quit on his team and his players, I'd have a hard time arguing again. So I have to say, my takeaway from this season, and as I was really surprised by that, I'm not surprised by his outburst, but I am surprised by the way he managed the team for a stretch of the season.
Yep, and I'll just say real briefly, I can't say any more than I've already said on Twitter. Yes, I know on the surface I look like a hypocrite because last season I was praising him and now I'm completely Conte out. But you got to look at each season differently. Last season he was tremendous, he was a great leader, but as you said, David, he's kind of a bit of a front runner. When things are going well, he's brilliant. There's really nobody better than him. But this year, the league adapted to him. He didn't really know what to do in terms of how to adapt back. He didn't get the players he wanted from the board, which, by the way, he should have known when he accepted the job that the board is terrible. He should have known that. He should have done the research himself. Complaining about the board is going to get you nowhere. And then, as you said, David, kind of mid-season, He lost his aura. He lost his pizzazz. He is a passionate man. He stopped celebrating when we were playing well, and I speak as we as Chelsea, and he stopped getting upset when they weren't playing well. So he clearly quit midseason, and I can't condone that, but I do thank him for the Premier League title last year. So I got to move on. Once again, I start sweating when I talk about this. So let's move to the next Twitter question, David. Could Goulam move to the Premier League next summer, and would that be more likely should Sarri leave Napoli?
So, you know, you're going to see a lot of Napoli players linked in transfer rumors this summer, unfortunately. And I think that would have happened, to be fair, even had they won the title. So, look, Goulam, I thought up until December, was the best left back in Serie A. I think he had really improved, was really tremendous. Napoli really was never exactly the same without him. On that left flank, they were so dominating with him. Now, since then, he signed an extension with Napoli with an exit clause, I think, of around 40, 45 million euros, like substantial. But, you know, there's very few good left backs. I've said this ad nauseum. There just aren't that many good ones. So I think there's a market for him despite the two knee injuries he had this year. So a team could be reticent, you know, to give him a big deal, pay that exit clause without knowing if he's fully fit. But talent-wise, he's absolutely brilliant. I do think there could be a connection with Sarri in the sense that I think if Napoli wants to keep Sarri, they're going to have to promise him they're going to do all they can to keep as many as his favorite players, and Goulam's a really key player for him. So I could see this having an impact. If Sarri leaves, he could go. But again, I think teams also have to look at the health concern, not just him as a player.
All right, next Twitter question. This is an interesting one. David, what are the odds Diawara leaves Napoli to join Liverpool?
A good question. And look, you know, this again ties into Sarri, because I think if Sarri stays, he's going to make a push to keep Jorginho, a player like really one of real Sarri's boys, so important to him. So I could see Sarri telling De Laurentiis, I'll stay, but you got to try to keep him. So if that were to happen, it's possible they sell Diarra, who is a very promising player. This season, I think he took a little bit of a step back, didn't play quite as much as the previous season. So I doubt Napoli is going to sell both, but I think when you look at like the age, Jorginho 6 years older, would make more sense in a lot of ways to sell him and keep Diarra, but maybe Sarri will insist to keep Jorginho. But long and short of it, I'd be surprised if both of them are still on the squad next season.
All right, next Twitter question. We're going to go to Inter, kind of a three-parter. David, what will Stefan De Vrij bring to Inter, and will his arrival impact Skriniar's future? And when can we expect Lautaro Martinez's signing to be announced? And also, are there any other moves Inter are working on?
A lot going on with Inter. And look, you know, I'm going to sound pretty optimistic and take it with a grain of salt, because every year I'm usually very optimistic with Inter's transfer moves. I think, you know, the result of their transfer moves can be up for debate, but they always end up getting players that I think, especially fans outside of Serie A, are a little bit surprised. And I think De Vrij is a great example of this. So here's a player, an expiring contract with Lazio. This season actually stayed healthy. He's appeared in 34 Serie A matches. A very good center back. Definitely one of the best in Serie A in all of Europe. In his prime, turned 26 in February. Really exciting player. There aren't that many great center backs, and Inter has made that deal. Not official, they haven't announced it, but they deposited the contract in the league offices. To me, this is an absolute home run for Inter. Just think about the fact they weakened Lazio. Lazio was trying to keep De Vrij. Now, they didn't even have to pay for him, so Lazio doesn't even get money towards a replacement. So they weakened Lazio. They get a very good center back. Now, look, Inter already is strong at center back because Miranda has been very good in the second half of the season. Skriniar has been probably the best center back in all of Serie A this season. So to me, with De Vrij coming in, you're really giving yourself all options. And I think a lot of what Inter is going to do on the market is also dependent on if they qualify for the Champions League or not. Let's say they do, there's a chance that they can keep all three of these center backs, and I think talent-wise, that's as good a trio as there is in all of Serie A. Give Spalletti the option of playing three at the back if he wanted to, or rotate him more. His top backup right now is Ranocchia. This is an absolute home run. Let's say Inter decides for financial reasons that they want to cash in on Skriniar. You'd be hard-pressed to get a better replacement than De Vrij, and even better, you're getting him for free. So all the money that you do get for Skriniar, you can, you know, put it towards your FFP or reinvest it elsewhere. Now, look, ideally, I'm sure all Inter fans would love to keep them all, and a long-term duo of Skriniar and De Vrij together would be sensational. But this for Inter is an absolute home run. It also brings so much drama to the last match between Lazio and Inter, which could have huge Champions League implications. Like, I was asked, would De Vrij even play? Like, what a scenario that would be. So home run for Inter with this move. Whatever else happens with their center backs, if you're an Inter fan, you should be thrilled with this. As far as the Lautaro Martinez deal, like, he is an Inter player. As I've been told, they won't loan him out. He'll be on the squad next season. A lot of people are asking me, why hasn't Inter announced it? Why has he not taken a medical? The thing is, Inter, because of their financial fair play issues, it's all about when you announce players, what fiscal year it's put on, the timing of it, because Inter's going to have to raise some funds to meet their financial fair play issues. So I have a feeling they're going to make that Luis Lautaro Martinez deal official. After that, I could be wrong, but I get the sense that the reason it hasn't been announced is strictly for this. The difference with free signings is you can announce them. They don't impact your financial fair play issues, but any player that you pay a transfer fee when you're in Inter situation, you have to be very careful when you announce it. But I was told it's a done deal. He'll be on Inter and he won't be loaned out. He's expected to be on the squad. Another move that Inter is making, we talked about it on the Marzio site today, they're going to sign another player on a free transfer. Very good move, Asamoah, who I think has been Juve's best wing back. I think he's definitely been better than Alexandro on the left back. I think he's been more consistent than any of Juve's right backs. And Asamoah is also good in the midfield, so he could help Inter as a huge hole at left back. He could help in the midfield. You get him on a free transfer. That's a great move. Asamoah has been fairly healthy this season. So great move there. That move should be announced fairly soon. So those are on the bright side. On the negative side, it's not going to be easy for Inter to keep Cancelo, who I think has been really good in the second half of the season, because his current club, Valencia, has offers that are higher than the option to buy that Inter has on Cancelo. So they told Inter, we're not going to give you any discounts. You have to pay it by the end of May. And with Inter's financial fair play issues, that's going to be a tough one. So Inter looks really reinforced with De Vrij and Asamoah and Lautaro Martinez, but they might have a hole at right back. But overall, you got to be very happy with how Inter has started the transfer window.
Yeah, I think De Vrij is a great signing. He'll be fresh to go. The Netherlands is not in the World Cup, so that's a
good point there.
That's a top signing right there. All right, Dave, this one's very interesting. It's been a year since cash was thrown at Donnarumma on the field by Milan fans. He appears to have lost his form since then. Is he better off leaving Milan?
I have so many thoughts on Donnarumma. I mean, he's really had such a remarkable year, and I don't really say it in a positive way, like so much going on. You know, this time last year, it looked like he was going to leave Milan. He had expiring contract. He wasn't going to extend. Then he seems to have pushed to stay at Milan, signed a huge deal. He earned so much at 19 years old. Like, what an odd period, man. It's like he's had his career, everything's happened so fast. Like, I feel for him, you know, 19-year-old kid, you know, as much as you can feel for someone who makes $6 million net a year, it's been really a wild ride for him. I've said all along, I never thought Pipperina was leaving Napoli to go to Milan with a big salary to be a backup. So my expectation is he will leave. On the negative side for Milan, it's thing too, you got to think that Donnarumma's transfer value has taken a hit after this season. If only also because of how good Alisson has been. You know, last year you would have thought Donnarumma was the keeper all the rich clubs would have wanted. Now I think it's definitely Alisson, although he's a little bit older. He's been much better. So definitely a very interesting stretch for Donnarumma. My expectation is that he leaves Milan, but maybe the return won't be as good as some fans originally thought.
All right, next Twitter question. How much would Politano improve Milan?
Yeah, and I really don't want to get too dark on Milan, and maybe in this podcast after what happened yesterday, it's hard not to. So I have a couple of thoughts on this. So on the Marzio site, we linked Politano to Milan yesterday. And look, I think the reaction from Milan fans overall was really bad on this. Maybe they're expecting a bigger name. But at the end of the day, Politano right now has more goals in Serie A than any player on Milan. I'm not sure if this says more about Milan's attack, and probably does, but Politano's had a good season. He's been the main reason Sassuolo avoided relegation. Not only does he have an impressive goal tally, I'm always a fan of looking at which teams are interested in a player, and we've had Napoli, who has a great track record with players in Politano's position, have been interested in him for quite some time. Juve as well, maybe it was to keep him away from Napoli. We've also seen Inter interested in him. And look, Inter has made some good moves. Maybe they haven't panned out, but these clubs tend to go for good players. To me, the issue is, look, if Milan gets Politano, that could be a pretty good addition, but he can't be the main reinforcement for Milan's attack. The gap is just too big between Milan and the other team. So I think Politano would be okay for Milan, but he can't be the main reinforcement.
All right, how about this one? This one's an interesting one. Is there a larger gap between Juve and the Real Madrids and Bayerns of the world, or a larger gap between Juve and the rest of Serie A?
It's a great question. And to me, my takeaway from this season in the Champions League, not just from Juve, Real Madrid, but from what I saw from the other teams, is I really think Juve can compete with any team in the Champions League. They're not as good as, say, Bayern or Real Madrid, but I think they can definitely beat them on any day. So I think the gap there has definitely become narrower. The gap in Serie A, look, you know, I think Napoli is going to take a step back. I mentioned it earlier. I'm always more bullish on Inter than what reality should suggest, but I could see maybe Inter getting closer. Roma, with the financial resources they have for the Champions League, could be improving in the transfer window instead of taking a step back. So I think the gap in Serie A could be getting closer too, but it might be changing. I think Napoli probably going to take a step back. I'm not sure what we can expect from Milan, but this is an interesting question. Let's see what happens with the transfer window, but I think Juve fans have to feel pretty good about their team in the Champions League next season.
All right, this is a fun one, David. How would you handle Juventus's transfers if you were in charge of the old lady?
Great question. And look, you know, for me, I've seen Juve linked to a lot of strikers, and I know a lot of Juve fans would love to have Morata back. But the positions I'm really looking at, if I was running Juve's Mercato, would be the midfield. We've seen Emre Can linked to Juve for a long time. I think there's a pretty good chance he'll be an addition on Juve. I don't think he can be the only addition in the midfield. I think Juve basically has to do what they did in the past few years, like modernizing their attack, investing a lot there. I think they need to do the same for the midfield. I think they're pretty much set everywhere else. Right back, you know, maybe Cuadrado could organically be the solution there. That's a position that I would look as well. And then we'd have to see what happens with Alexandro. I will tell you, if I was Marotta, one player I wouldn't have allowed to leave as a Samoa. I actually think that's a pretty big loss for Juve. But you know what? Marotta and his right-hand man, Paratici, really know what they're doing. I wouldn't think, just because you see newspapers and a lot of sites linking Juve to strikers, that that's their main priority, because I know it's really elsewhere.
All right, this has been an interesting development. It's our last Twitter question. What do you think of the introduction of reserve squads in Serie A?
I've been thinking a lot about this, and this may be biased because, you know, I grew up supporting Padova, who was in the second division most of the time, and the third division. So to me, Serie B and Serie C Lega Pro, like, they had those leagues really have an identity. I don't see them as just, you know, the lower tiers of Italian football. And I can see the reaction from Juve fans and big clubs is, oh, this is a great thing. We'll have our young players on the B team and blah, blah, blah. But to me, this is a very good for the teams at the top, but very bad for the teams at the bottom and the lower divisions. Like, think about this. A lot of these teams, they rely on getting young players on loans from the top clubs. Now the top clubs, they have more of an incentive of putting it on their B team. So I could see this having a big impact on a lot of smaller teams. I think this is going to widen the gap between the big teams and the smaller teams. So again, I get the reaction of Juve fans, but if you're a fan of like a minor team, this isn't a good thing. I can see why this is actually coming to Serie A. I've been thinking a lot about it because in recent years, they took away the co-ownerships, which really brought a lot of financial advantages because the clubs, I'm not saying you could do shady things on the books with the co-ownerships, but you really could, and you develop players that way. So that got taken away. I've seen they're potentially thinking of taking away loaning players to other teams. So this is the evolution of it. It doesn't surprise me that the Italian league is doing this, but I think there will be some repercussions for the smaller teams. So I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone for your great support of the podcast. Please keep sending us in questions. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. If you're listening to us on other platforms, we appreciate the support. We're always looking for new ones. So keep sending suggestions with the CalcioLand hashtag. So for the interview part of the podcast, I really couldn't think of a better person than the gentleman joining us in a minute. So we were thinking about doing something similar to what we did with Sarri on how he would hypothetically fit on Chelsea. There's been a lot of speculation on Allegri. Of course, Juve had a big match, and I was trying to think, who can I ask for this podcast? It didn't take me long to think of our good friend Aaron West, who we've had on when the podcast started. For those of you that don't know him, he's on Copa 90 USA. He's doing fantastic work there. Previously worked at Fox Soccer, been doing some awesome articles and coverage on MLS that we'll get into. But the reason we have him here is he's both a Juve and an Arsenal supporter, so perfect for this. I got a chuckle when I told Alex, the producer, that Aaron was coming on, and he was like, everyone loves Aaron. This is fantastic. And I was like, it's pretty remarkable because, again, he's an Arsenal and Juve fans, and people still love him. So with that intro, Aaron, it's a real pleasure to have you back on CalcioLand. How you doing, buddy?
Buonasera. Very happy to be back, man. It's been too long. Thank you guys for having me.
Awesome. So you're going to have to tell us at the end of the podcast what your secret is, because Arsenal and Juve fans maybe don't have the greatest reputation, but everyone loves you. So let's cut to the chase and speak hypothetically. Arsenal has a coaching vacancy. There's been a lot of speculation on Allegri. So since you're very familiar with Arsenal as a club, and you followed all of Allegri's career at Juve very closely, let's ask you, how do you think that would hypothetically work?
I think in terms of success, Max Allegri would do really well at Arsenal. I think with his tactical ability, one of his biggest strengths, I think, is dropping into a club and finding what is going to work best for them in a tactical sense. What's going to work best for the players that they have at their disposal. I think in terms of his tactical ability, he'll be head and shoulders above most coaches in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He is a born winner. We've seen that. I don't know, say born winner, but he is a winner. We've seen him win over and over again with Juve. He has brought them every bit of success you can have, except for that Champions League trophy, taking them to two finals, one countless Serie A's, Coppa Italia's. He is a winner. He's versatile. So in terms of success, I absolutely think he would do really well for Arsenal. In terms of fit and aesthetics, I don't know if he's the right one. In my opinion, I think I brought up in terms of potential replacements for Arsene Wenger, I've brought up a few times Diego Simeone, simply because I think he's a complete departure from who Arsene Wenger is in terms of kind of grabbing players by the neck and yelling at players and getting the locker room in order and kind of changing around the atmosphere of the locker room and that whole kind of the typical Arsenal malaise that I think the club has fallen into and kind of shaking that up. But the pushback I got was for his aesthetics. Diego Simeone is not typically the most free-flowing of coaches. For Max Allegri, yes, he has become known, I think, for a lot of fans for instituting that kind of attacking heavy Juve lineup and working Mandzukic and Douglas Costa and Dybala and Higuain and all those guys into the lineup. But in terms of how his teams actually play on a regular basis, I don't think Arsenal fans would be super happy because he does default to a more cautious approach, even when he has the attacking players at his disposal. So it's two things for me. I think as a in terms of how he would do in success and trophies, I think eventually he would bring trophies to Arsenal and they would probably win. But I don't think it would necessarily be in the aesthetic manner that Arsenal fans would prefer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, and I'm full agreement there. A couple of things stood out to me. Yeah, I mean, we've seen a good, very good track record, at least in the first season when Italian managers come to the Premier League. And everyone that's watched Juve in the Champions League knows how good Allegri is tactically, and I totally agree with you. It's a big departure from Wenger. So you talked a lot about Allegri, you know, getting results. You know, as you've read a lot of Juve fans, and maybe there's been times where you felt this way too, where, you know, it felt pretty frustrating where Juve this season especially was doing the bare minimum and winning games. So I wanted to ask you, if you had to assess Allegri, do you really think he's gotten the most out of his squad? Like, when I look at Juve's attack, this is as an explosive attack as Juve's had, and I've been following them for a long time. I don't think they've really had a player quite like Douglas Costa. I think Higuain has done really, really well. They have Dybala, of course. So give me your assessment on Allegri's ability to get the most out of the squad. As you mentioned, the results speak for themselves, but maybe there are some fans who were left wanting for more.
Yeah, I think it's a very tough question, because I think in certain ways he was a little bit handicapped. I absolutely believe there should have been another midfielder bought. A high top quality midfielder bought over this past summer. And in terms of what he had to work with and what he got out of that midfield and this team, I am very, very happy. But on the other side of that coin, there have been many times where I feel he kind of put the handbrake on them. You see a lot of times Juve come out in the first 20, 25 minutes of games and look absolutely incredible. They come out super fast. They're pinging the ball around. They're all over teams. And then once they get a goal, or once it kind of slows down a little bit, they will sit back. And a lot of times it is once they get that early goal, they will then cede control of the game to teams. And that, for me, is where I dislike a lot of Allegri's management. Again, I think he is a fantastic manager, and I'm very grateful for everything he's done. But for me, the shortcomings come when Juve have the upper hand and can press the issue and should press the issue, especially against smaller teams that they should be dominating. They will let those teams back into the match and take their foot off the pedal. And I think Allegri's caution starts to show up in those moments. And that's when I think it has hurt Juve in the past.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. So let's talk one question more general on Juve. So, of course, yes, we're recording this on Thursday. So they won the Coppa Italia final very decisively. Dave, you know, they've won the Scudetto, technically not mathematically, seventh in a row. I think, you know, the match against Real Madrid and the Champions League, like, I have a lot of thoughts on it. I think Juve, you know, has to think that they've bridged the gap from the top clubs in the Champions League. I think next season they have to go in thinking they can compete with everyone. So what's your assessment on Juve's season overall? Would you still consider this a very successful season for the club, or would you have expected a little bit more?
I think so. If they hadn't come back in the way that they did against Real Madrid, if that second leg wasn't the way that it ended, I would have looked at this season a lot differently, especially after that first leg and the way that they kind of just seeded everything and it just kind of rolled over, in my opinion, almost. But after that second leg, the fact that they're going to win their seventh Serie A trophy in a row, knock on wood, unless something wild happens, but they're going to win their seventh Serie A title in a row. They're going to win the fourth Coppa Italia title in a row. They went out of Champions League with, I think, a lot of the world, most of the world saying, hey, these guys came to play. They might have gotten robbed. Yeah, Real Madrid is who they are, but I think Juve came out of that tie with their heads held high, and I look back at this season as a success. I would have obviously liked to see Juve in the final, Champions League final again. I really would have preferred to see Buffon winning a Champions League trophy before he leaves, obviously. That all being said, Champions League trophy is the hardest trophy in the world to win, unless you want to count the World Cup, which is completely different. In club football, in club soccer, the World Cup, the Champions League is the hardest trophy to win. It's an absurdly difficult trophy to win. Only a few small handful of people in the world can say they've done it. Yeah. And you may have gotten to two Champions League finals in the last, 5 years. And even though they haven't won, I think this year is a success. So based on all that, I would say it's a success.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting to me with the Champions League is now the bar has been raised so high, like so many clubs dominate their leagues where it's almost like if you don't win the Champions League, it's a disappointment. But at the end of the day, there's only one team that can lift that trophy. So it's such a high bar if you're going to decide the success of your season just on that. So let me ask you one more question kind of related to Juve and Arsenal that this is a topic that I found pretty interesting. So, you know, there's been a lot of speculation on Allegri and Arsenal. This week we had Khedira, you know, he's got 1 year left on his deal at Juve, you know, make a statement that he'd be interested in working, in playing in the Premier League, that he wants to win titles in as many leagues as possible before he retires, and how he's always wanted to play in England. Then, of course, we have Lichtsteiner, who's been a very good Juve player, has won all the titles, who announced that at the end of the season he's leaving the club, his contract's expiring, and that he won't be staying in England. So there was a lot of speculation. I think Arsenal fans kind of put all this all together and kind of saw it as potentially that Allegri's coming with Khedira and Lichtsteiner. What was interesting to me, especially on Khedira, is like the difference of opinion on him. I think most Premier League fans were like, yeah, this is great, I hope we sign him. And fans from different clubs, the reaction from Juventini was a little bit different. So tell me hypothetically, since you're very familiar with these two players, kind of what's your perception of them? And this is strictly hypothetical, how that would work out if they were to all go to Arsenal next season.
Yeah. I'll start with Licht. Number one, I completely agree with you in your assessment of him, not as a Juve legend, but someone who should be held as very integral to a very important part of Juventus' history. Yeah. I don't consider him a legend. I'm forever grateful for what he did, and I think he was fantastic for us. In terms of him at Arsenal, if as an Arsenal fan, I would be okay with Licht as like a backup right back, because I think he brings something that this team doesn't have. It's a grit, a determination, a will to win, a know-how, and that kind of edge. Like I've talked to Adam Digby a lot about this, and Licht is the kind of player who he's not going to stand out as the best, most technical, the best player on the field. But if there are moments in a match when you need a spark, when you need something to happen, it always kind of seems to be either Chiellini or Lichtsteiner going in on a tackle, getting in someone's face, revving the crowd up, getting those players going, doing something, whether it's kicking someone, just getting a foul, whatever it is, they will do that little thing that it takes to get the team, to get that edge back, to get them going.
And to me, he's like a player. Yeah, to me, if you're a fan of your team and Lichtsteiner's on him, you're going to love him because he'll do anything to win. But as an opponent, he's the type of player that you absolutely love. And I mean that as a compliment.
Exactly.
Like, I think those are great players to have.
Yeah, every team needs
those players. Chiellini's the same. You're totally right.
Right. Like, if I was I don't even want to say this almost. If I was a Milan fan, I would hate Lichtsteiner. I would absolutely hate him. If I was an opposing fan of Juve, I would hate his guts. But because I'm a Juventus supporter, I love him. He's a player you want on your side. So as a backup right back, absolutely. He would be fantastic for that locker room. And he's still got the quality to play 20 games, I would say a season, at a high level. For Khedira, I think it would be really interesting to see how Allegri wants to play. Because Khedira, I think, is a player that gets hated on a lot because on optics, he looks slow. He moves the ball slowly, but he's one of those players where most of what he gives you is in between his ears. He is one of the smartest players in the world. There's no coincidence that he won Champions League with Real Madrid, that he's won a World Cup with Germany, that everyone who he's played with speaks in such high regard of Sami Khedira because he's one of the smartest players in the game. He is an absolute unit. He's a strong man. He can get into tackles. He can get up and down the pitch. He's surprisingly mobile, even though he is slow. But I think at this point in his career and in the physical league that the Premier League is, I could see him doing well maybe in like a midfield three where he's protected, kind of not a Pirlo. He's not a Pirlo type player, but in that kind of midfield three where he's more protected by two more athletic players, and he has the ability on the ball to kind of direct traffic, especially in the Premier League, which is not as tactical of a league. No disrespect to the Premier League. Just I think in that sort of role, if he's protected by more athletic players who have their legs under them and can get up and down and kind of take that role away from him, where he's just kind of being the intelligent one, guiding play, sitting in pockets and moving the ball around. I think he could do well, but as an Arsenal supporter, I don't think I'd want Sami Khedira. They already have a slow player who in Granit Xhaka, who kind of occupies that same sort of in-between role, an interesting in-between role. So I think he would end up doing decently well, but as an Arsenal fan, I wouldn't want Khedira at Arsenal.
Yeah, I think Khedira this season, I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he performed in the big, big matches. I mean, he really came through. As you mentioned, he's won a Champions League. It's not surprising to me that Khedira and Mandzukic, the two guys on Juve's squad that have won a Champions League, you know, in those big games, they always showed up. But I'm with you. I think maybe had Arsenal signed him 2-3 years ago when Juve got him, it would have been a good fit. Maybe not so much now. So right. One thing that I wanted to ask you, and this is kind of how you're very qualified for Arsenal and Juve and Allegri, this next topic as well. You talked about Buffon, how you'd like to see him. You would have liked to see him win the Champions League before he retired. Now, some that aren't that familiar with your work might not know that you've actually interviewed Buffon in person in Italian, which I was really impressed by, that you pulled that off. And look, you know, there's been a lot of talk on Buffon ever since that Real Madrid match. That episode, certainly to people that aren't that familiar with him, was really a huge deal. We had a guest on, Ben Golliver, an NBA writer who made a great point. It wasn't on Buffon, but in general, and he says he tries not to judge people based on their worst moment. And I think in a lot of ways, against Real Madrid, that was the worst moment that I've seen Buffon in his career. But for me, you know, when I think of his whole legacy, that to me is just really a very small footnote. So I wanted to get your thoughts on everything that Buffon's been involved with. He's almost certainly going to retire in a couple of weeks. You've met with him in person. I'm sure that was a big highlight of your career. I'm sure there'll be many more, but I'm sure that one's going to be very special for you. So give me your thoughts on all that's been going on with Buffon and his eventual retirement.
Yeah, for me, it's vast overkill to say anything. I've seen plenty of like articles and think pieces. Buffon's legacy is ruined over this outburst, blah, 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 blah. The great Buffon, this outburst, it's dumb to me. The man had just seen his best chance of winning the only trophy that he's never won, the most important trophy, kind of taken from him. And he was misguided. I think it was wrong that the way that he went after Oliver afterwards. But again, look at what Buffon has done his entire career. There is not one person, I believe, that has met him that has a bad thing to say about Buffon. And like you said, Ben Golliver probably said it best. I definitely don't want him to be remembered for his probably his worst moment. I think a lot of casual fans and even journalists in general, people who haven't played at a high level, really, really underestimate the emotion, the toll, everything that it takes, especially directly after that moment, probably the most emotional moment of his life. Like, legitimately, that was probably the most emotional moment of his life, the most vulnerable he's probably ever been, to feel like he had everything taken away from him after 40 years of being the greatest, of doing everything he possibly could to win, on a fair level, and feeling cheated in that moment. And in the days afterwards, I completely understand why. We hold athletes up to be more than human, to be better than humans, but they're all just people. And Buffon, as great of a human he is, he's just a person, and he made a couple mistakes. So I'm not going to hold that against him. I'm clearly extremely biased, but I don't think people should hold that against him, especially given the body of work and given like what type of person he's been over his entire career.
Yeah, and, you know, all the abuse that the referee and his girlfriend received, like, I don't justify that in any way. That was terrible. But I will say, and I feel pretty strongly about this, that that would have happened to that extent in the same way had Buffon done nothing. Just because of the controversial decision, I'm not here to say if it was a penalty or not, but just because of the decision in the moment, I think a lot of blame is laid to Buffon for what happened with the referee. And I hate to say it, to me, those are pretty much separate issues, like maybe slightly connected, but I hate to say it, I think that abuse would have happened regardless just because of the nature of the decision. And I think people who might have an agenda or like to make Italian football look bad kind of took and ran with that. So a real shame there. So let's shift gears. So recently, Aaron, you really did fantastic work covering the explosion of soccer in Atlanta. And for my day job, I traveled to Atlanta a few times a year. What impressed me last year when they were launching the team is how much hype there was around the city for the MLS team. I saw advertisements everywhere. For people that aren't familiar with what's going on there, like, they're averaging 60,000-70,000 fans at like every game. Like, it's an incredible atmosphere, but it goes beyond what is happening at the actual games in Atlanta. So tell our listeners, and I'm going to tweet after that amazing work that you did, but give our listeners a sense of what's going on down there, because it's really like a soccer explosion like I've never seen in the United States.
Yeah, man, it's very, very, very cool. Growing up in the South, Atlanta was always kind of a little bit of a model for, not a model, but we kind of looked at Atlanta because there were no MLS teams when I was growing up. There were no teams really, in big teams in the South. But Atlanta was always actually a pretty big soccer scene that I think people around the country didn't really know about. But it was really, really cool for me to be able to go down to Atlanta and see how that community has truly embrace Atlanta United, and especially the Black community, because that's something in this country that really hasn't been done before for a team to actually make an effort and for the community to truly embrace being Black in soccer. And it was something that was like actually pretty emotional for me, just to see that many Black faces supporting a soccer team. A lot of, like, some people, and it was really cool because it was the Black experience in this country. A whole wide range of different people who have grown up playing soccer, people who just picked up soccer because they started playing FIFA, people who went to an Atlanta United game for the very first time and got hooked on it. So it was just this complete wide swath of people and the atmosphere there. Atlanta, Southern cooking, Southern hospitality, it's a real thing. And it was just great to see all that in a soccer framework, which is something that I've really never seen before.
Yeah, and it's great that the MLS All-Star Game is going to take place there. They're going to play against Juve. So I think it's going to be a great exposure even for people, you know, that maybe follow Serie A here in North America, maybe don't give MLS much of a chance. I think this is a great advertisement for the league and what's going on there. Like, you know, I'm not a big MLS expert by any means, but I always felt like all the hype on Ibrahimovic, to me, takes away from, like, that's the stuff we should be talking about more than Ibrahimovic coming here at the end of his career, is the stuff going on in cities like Atlanta, because that's truly incredible. So what you did in Atlanta is just one of the really exciting things you're doing at Copa 90 USA. So tell our listeners some of your favorite stories or segments that you've done in recent months and what you're working on for the future.
Yeah, one of the coolest things, one of the most fun things we're doing right now, we have we have a show called FIFA Showdown, where we basically take different scenarios around the soccer world, like putting an MLS club in the Premier League, or putting a Premier League club in MLS, just different, all kinds of scenarios that we wager on. We'll play FIFA games to determine the results. We'll do sims, just because FIFA sims are wildly inaccurate, and it's just like a fun game to then bet on them, basically. So that's a very fun show that we're doing. The World Cup, we're in full World Cup preparation right now, depending on how visas work and if Russia declares war on, if war breaks out, we may be in Russia, we may not be. That will all depend on kind of the state of the world as we get closer to the World Cup. But yeah, man, it's just, I've been really, really fortunate to have landed from Fox Soccer when I left there. I landed at Copa 90, and it's just been an incredible experience kind of chasing my passions in the soccer world. And I'm really, really excited for a lot of the stuff we've got coming. The FIFA Showdown is one of the cool things. We've got a live show that we do every week, typically post Champions League. I'm trying to think what else. Probably still to this day, the most fun thing I've done is probably the Buffon interview. But I also have a show called The Worldy Shot Challenge, where we recreate some of the greatest goals. I just shot with Tyler Adams a couple weeks ago. We've got some pretty cool people lined up. So that's fun for me to be able to actually get out of the studio or get out from just speaking and get back on the pitch and hang out with actual players and kind of feel like a player again and get to take pot shots at goal. So that's probably the most fun thing that we do is the Worldy Challenge. And over at All-Star and in the coming months, I'll be dealing with some pretty cool people. So be on the lookout for that, especially around Juve. Knock on wood, we'll almost likely be doing it with some pretty cool Juve players for the All-Star match. So
yeah, because last year you did a Pjanic, right? You interviewed Pjanic
last year when the game was really good. And did
and a Cuadrado,
actually,
right?
My very first work with Copa 90 was doing like a crossbar shot challenge with Pjanic and Cuadrado, and then interviewing Pjanic. So a funny story actually about that first shot challenge. I get a lot of flack for it, like anytime it pops back up, because for that I didn't actually have boots, so I had to wear like Adidas running shoes, and the running shoes that I wore, I only had two pairs of shoes there. The ones that I wore had like a very thick sole, and if you watch the video, like, I don't strike the ball very well because I'm really just trying to not break my ankles. So anyone who goes back and watches those videos, I promise you, I'm not as bad as it looks.
It's
because I'm wearing sneakers and I almost broke my ankle. You can watch some of the other ones. I am not a great footballer, but I'm not as bad as it looks in that first video.
All right, good that you clarified. So, Aaron, you were, as usual, you did fantastic work. I was enjoy seeing your growth. Really, really great stuff. We promise to have you back on the podcast sooner, and I look forward to finally meeting you in person in Atlanta. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having me.